started with our last talk for our morning session. So we have. We have Jackie Troy from the University of Sydney, and Mujahid could not be here today, but she's presenting, and we're talking about documenting, mapping, and blogging creative solutions for saving indigenous languages in northern Pakistan and southeastern Australia.
Okay, so thank you, everybody. Yes, it's been a fabulous conference. Mahalo nui loa to all the Hawaiians for putting this on. And when I was talking with my friend Mujahid, my friend, my colleague, about what we might present, we were also talking to Rebecca Ingram, who has also been at this conference presenting about Indigenous mapping. She works particularly with Mohawk people in Canada. And we originally thought we'd put together something, I guess, more specifically about mapping and getting a sense of place through using social media. So that's infused through this talk, but it's not specifically what it's about. So in the end, Mujahid and I wanted to tell you about, I guess, our own personal, quite local experiences. Myself as an Aboriginal person from Australia, from the snowy mountains of the southeast. He's from the high mountains of the north of Pakistan, so we're mountainy people. And we both have a great desire to see our countries represented properly on the world stage, but also to see our environments protected. His own environment in the north of Pakistan was devastated by the Taliban when they overran that area. Everybody in the world knows about this area because of those people. Their forests were logged, were cut down and burnt and destroyed, and he's had a particular interest, Mujahid, in seeing these ancient trees, the deodar or law in his language, Tawali, protected, the few that remain. And there's still a lot of people logging that country to use the timber for all sorts of purposes, including just burning it to keep warm in the winter. So he uses social media as an activist. He's been a journalist, and he now works with an organisation called IBT, Idara Baraya Tarim Otariki, which is focused on language and education. In my own case, I'm a professor at the University of Sydney. I direct Indigenous research across the university, but I have a very local interest. I want to see my language spoken again, and I'll tell you a little bit about how my people are starting to engage with their language again. If we were a people devastated by measles in the 19th century, never a very big group of people. Like Aboriginal people all over Australia, we're organised in clan groups, family groups, and measles pretty much destroyed not only our people, but then of course our capacity to care for our country. So right now we're facing a major challenge. Australia, the driest country in the world, thinks that having hydroelectric schemes is a good way of generating power when we could be using wind or solar. So as the Australian government's about to build Snowy Number 2 and blast holes all through my country and destroy sites that have never even been properly documented. So I guess Mujahid and I both face these challenges around our environment. So that's the kind of understanding country, as we say. But then also, how do we connect our communities? And there's been a lot of that discussion in this conference. People, Aboriginal people all over the world, Indigenous people are using social media to connect and to start to use their languages again. Mujahid comes from, well, I'll talk to his slide deck, so I'll come along now with my own, I guess, story of my country and my people briefly. So I also want to do what I think most of the Indigenous presenters have done, acknowledge the Hawaiian people for allowing us to be on their country and present. And I am very grateful that as the sovereign people of this country, they're prepared to have us here. And I look forward to seeing you all in Australia soon. Welcome, Inan. I'm very pleased that there is Mujahid. Tawrari could not be here, but we have Inan Ula, who's also from the same region. So I was just waxing delirious about your beautiful country and keeping it strong. So, Right, so in Australia, this is not my own piece of work, but I'd like to point you in the direction. There was a stand downstairs in the big hall from First Languages Australia. So this is, I guess, our way of connecting our people at the moment. I'm very proud to say that Aboriginal people in Australia who belong to this First Languages Australia group, which has been going now in various forms for, I guess, almost, well, it's certainly, it's possibly coming up for 30 years. It's quite close, the group that originally formed. So this is a map. I recommend people go to it and have a look because you can hear our languages spoken. And they were saying in their stand that people are now talking about us having 700 languages. I know for sure that the latest, I guess, research work done by Claire Bowen and her subgrouping project says there are at least 407 languages in Australia. So this is going to be a very important resource into the future. This is actually one of the earlier maps. It's still a map that's quite often used for Australia. This has about 250 different languages represented on it. It's the famous map from the Australian Institute for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Studies. And it's some kind of representation. I think if you did a survey any day of the week in Australia, the languages scene would change, which is good because a lot of our languages are coming back into use. My own language group is right down here. This is Narugu. And I live up in the Sydney area, and I've worked specifically on the language of Sydney, which is now known by all its different clan groups. There are about 27 clan groups in Sydney, and depending on what clan group you're talking to, it's their language. So in the CBD, it's Gadigal. Out in Western Sydney, it's Darug, and I just called it the Sydney language to keep out of the politics, so I stick with that one. So, right, this is my beautiful country. Inam, you recognise the mountains. They're a little flatter than yours, but these used to be, this is part of our Great Dividing Range all down the east coast of Australia. And this literally is, my mob lived down here still, we still go there, the ravine, which is down from a place called Kyandra. There's literally a drop of nearly a kilometre. So people used to say, oh no, Aboriginal people can't live up in that country in this, when it's snowing. Of course we did. We lived in sheltered valleys as people who, I think you, those of you from North America would laugh, and from Sawat you would be laughing. Of course you can live in snow. So that's my country. We're also known, and I can say to you, Namichi Mitong, that is my clan name. I am Yamich, and Naya is I. So this is the beginning of me using my language again, and I'm looking forward to helping my own mob, my own people into the future revive our language. We are the Bugong Moth Eaters. We used to have big festivals where people would gather to eat these moths every year. Lovely, delicious, peanut buttery, fatty, wonderful things to eat. And that's just another map of the sort of so-called tribes of southeastern Australia, but our language group. So you can see that in the coastal areas there's quite a density of languages. And names like Narugu for my country and for my language, it, probably we were divided into even more languages. It's just hard to know. The language scene was devastated so quickly after the British invaded in 1788 that it's hard to know. This is my mob. This is my scary mummy. She's an elder in our community, and this is another group of elders from, so we're sort of from two sides of the mountains. We're on the Threadbow side, and they're on what we call the Tumbarumba side, so that's Uncle John Casey, who does know quite a bit of language, which is exciting, so I'm hoping we'll get on and work together. So we had a corroboree, a big gathering last year where we all got together and started to, if you like, reform. So it's, even mobs like ours who've been so devastated can get back together. So this is me and my daughter, just to prove that we really are in cold country. We're the girls from Snowy River in 2017. And then a year later, there's more of us, our cousins all getting together. And so look out, the Narugu are coming. So what are we doing? Well, there's a lot of online activity. There are Narugu Facebook pages. Of course there are. My daughter thinks that's only for old people, but that's okay. So for those of us who use Facebook, and you can see on here, people are claiming the country. So this is the top. This is known as Kozloszko, after a Polish count, because somebody came into our country exploring and said, I will call this Kozloszko, after my favourite count, Polish count. But it's actually Kunama Nemanja. So you can see there's my clan name, because we're the highest clan group. And Kunama is the place of snow. So it's the snowy area of my clan group. And we're calling ourselves by our clan, our group name, Nargu. So people are beginning to use a little bit of language. We want to get that area dual named. Now, this is my cousin Peter Wapple's crow here, and he is obsessed with dingoes. Now, Inam, I was telling you about this dog that was brought by your mob into our country 6,000 to 10,000 years ago. So this is actually an Asiatic wolf that we call dingo now broadly in Australia, because it's come from the Sydney language word for dog, camp dog, as opposed to a warrigal, which is a wild dog. That's different. So he is here, he's in his text, he's using not only our language, in fact, hasn't really got any of our language in there. Oh, Nargu, Mirigang. So we talk about Mirigang as dog. Dingo was originally a Darug or a Sydney word. Bunjil, a wedge-tailed eagle, is a Kulin word from Victoria. And then he's belonging to this group, Wayapa Wuruk. Wayapa is the word for connect, and that's Peak Wurrung from Victoria again. So we have a lot of connection with people in the south below us in the state of Victoria. So here are people being Aboriginal, using Aboriginal language and starting to begin to reclaim it and using it proudly on Facebook. The Toowoomba Rooma group of the Kunama Nemanja are saying, right, it's time to get our language up online. So this is a word list that is known to us through Uncle John Casey. So they've actually put as much information as they possibly can about our language up online, so that people can go, and they're, you know, posting it on Facebook so people can get access to it easily. So this is the beginning of us, I guess, sharing our language knowledge and beginning to use our language again. This is like where you started, Inam. Inam gave me this wonderful story of the beginning of Torvali, and, you know, people saying, what is this thing? It's a bit like us, but you don't really exist. Yes, we do. We're Nargu. We're still here. We're continuing. And there are now videos. Now, these are interesting because people are using a lot of ceremony, a traditional practice, if you like, of corroboree, getting together, dancing, singing, but also making lots of speeches about who we are and what we are, sort of reclaiming our country by talking about it. So you can go online and see people doing welcomes to country, which is something really important too. And they're not flippant. We welcome people in with a formal welcome. So, and lots of social comment. At the moment, nothing too ferocious, but I'm, yeah, community politics. So, and in Sydney, I've had a lot to do with the mob there, getting their language going. So again, the Darug community out in Western Sydney recently had what was known as the Native Institution handed back to them as something that they can use into the future. And again, people are, you see these words like, I'm a proud Darug woman, talking about being on the Koori grapevine. So everybody uses this word in the southeast for Aboriginal person. So there's a kind of mixing of Aboriginal English with Aboriginal language, and people again performing. There was a corroboree for this ceremony. So there's this kind of, and there was a lot of twittering and blogging and all sorts of stuff going on around this. So this is what Aboriginal people in Australia are using constantly to stay in touch and use language. And Darug was a language that has been pretty much fast asleep since the 19th century. But it's certainly not sleeping now. It's loud and proud. And then again, they have a Darug mob have got a website where you can go and have a look at Darug language. It's more of a word list, but you can also hear the words spoken. They've got sound files attached to it. There's a Darug Dalang speech learner app. It's not up at the moment because they're working on it, but it's certainly something that you can get access to if you're interested in this language. And it can be downloaded onto iPhones and Androids. And then there's this New Year's message completely in Darug, which honestly, even 5 years ago, I would have said to you, that's, you wouldn't be seeing this. But here it is, people writing entire messages and people being able to respond to it. So, yeah, Wadama is now used as a common word for welcome. Didjirigura for thank you. So, Yanu, goodbye. So, everywhere, yeah, Yanu, everywhere you go is on our country, Yora. So, we are one people. Wugul, one people. Yura is their word for Aboriginal person. So, you know, this language is loud and proud again. And it's being sung. This is Jacinta Tobin, who's a strong language woman and a musician. And she worked with this band called The Preachers to collaborate on creating this song in their language. So, and doing a lot of crowdsourcing to support it. Now, I just have to go to the other PowerPoint, which is Mujahids. How do I get out of that one? Oh. What have I done, children? Okay, thanks. Right. Okay, so PowerPoint. Sorry, slideshow. Yeah, play from start. So, yeah. So this is Mujahid.
Hi.
You'd recognise these fabulous mountains, third highest mountain in the world, just down the end of his street. So, beautiful valley, and this is Beren, the kind of central community town there. Quick introduction to Tuvalu. Now, I feel embarrassed doing this because we've got a speaker here, but this is the word Tuvalu written in Urdu, because if you are going to write this language, you use the script that's the local script, of course. Dardic language spoken in the Swat district, and I put in a little map here because probably most people don't quite know where this place is. So Swat is at the top of Pakistan here in the Himalayas. And this is the area that this language is spoken is between, correct me if I'm wrong, Madian to Kailan, so in this part of the valley here. Pretty spectacular area. Very ancient traditions going back to Hinduism and Buddhism and even before, but of course it's now very much an Islamic area. Quick linguistic overview, there's about 200 million people in Pakistan. 73 indigenous languages, all are living except Badeshi. Mujahid and I argue about this constantly because there are people who still know something about Badeshi, so it's probably just sleeping or a little bit dozy. So anyway, and Tuvalu is one of the stronger languages in the area with 150,000 speakers, so this is where it is. This is some of the languages of Pakistan. As you, again, you can see there's quite a density of languages up in this area. And for those of you interested in European languages, you know, all kinds of interesting words from a range of other, like the word for cat is the same word as it is in Irish, the word for water, so pish is cat, whereas it's billy in Urdu, and ooh for water. Now, he does funky things with his PowerPoint, so in Tuvalu, people are really interested in the local environment, and there is actually a Tuvalu calendar, which was invented by a man, Bahadur Kaka, a long, long time ago, and he was a mathematician. So when Mujahid tweeted about this, the weather, and saying, look, this man, Wakil Kaka, an aged man from the Gunai Valley, said that the 12 days of the White Sala, period of extreme cold, has ended. But the 12 days of the Black Sala would be beginning today, the temperature will be rising. Lots of people got online and got very involved in this discussion about the environment in Tuvalu. And another thing that's happening is that people are using the word Tuvalu as their, if you like, surname. People don't generally have surnames per se, do they? So Mujahid is just Mujahid. But he's added Tuvalu, which is what this man here, Zubair Tuvalu, was he the first person?
Yeah.
He was the first person to use that term, so that is become a really big thing to do. And people write Tuvalu also. What's happening here? People also write their name in this script that's been developed for Tuvalu. So this is the word here to Raleigh, and they've got their first names. That's Mujahid?
Yeah, no, Zubair.
And Zubair, so
from
together. Starting to read this language, it's a good thing. So so they're writing both in multiple scripts, because people are classically multilingual in this area.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then you get this where people are, if you like, live streaming, singing, talking, having lots of fun in Tuvalu,
yeah,
and sharing the language. 2,500 views, you know. So people, it's a way, by using social media, people are able, at the moment when that was taken, it was absolutely freezing, and time's up. So I'm going to gallop to the end here. And the other thing that's happening is that people are reaching out to Tuvalu speakers like Mujahid to get help with learning it. So from all across Pakistan and indeed across the world. So he was asked to, he wrote this little book on daily conversation, and these students who were doing a project from Lahore wanted to know about his language. And then there was this woman from the Philippines who got in touch with Tuvalu people wanting to know how to speak Tuvalu. It's becoming, through social media, becoming quite an international language. So I'm waiting for Narugu to have the same success. Again, people are sharing poetry and, you know, enjoying the kind of deeper culture of the area. When the national media broadcast songs, people all get online and love to listen to their music. So musical practice is being revived as well. And this use of poetry is particularly important in the area. This is a translation of A Friend in Need is a Friend Indeed in Pashto and in Tuvalu. Pashto is the much bigger language of the area. I'm sorry, can I kind of gap through and finish this? Thank you. And recently with International Mother Language Day, Mujahid posted this lovely image of his own children who are multilingual. They speak Tuvalu, Urdu, Pashto and some English. And these kids are growing up in this kind of social media world using their language, and I think his son Azan's already got his own website as he would, or Facebook page as he would. I know my 16-year-old daughter's been doing this, but she doesn't use Facebook, like I said, it's for only for old people. But anyway, and this is the Tuvalu keyboard that was developed that has got the additional characters that you can use, where you can see these extra, that's right, it's this one here. This one here and this one here. So these are good, and here, Google keyboards, which are available in Keyman and on Google keyboards. So people are able to actually write their language. They've got some extra sounds like Z. Is that one?
Sh.
It's a different sound that you don't have in the languages elsewhere around that region.
Which one is
so.
It?
Pardon?
Which one again? Can you tell me?
This one here, huh?
Yeah.
Can you?
So,
this is the one that reminds me very much of these sounds up in your region. So, right. So when people walked across and came via the Daly River, sat down and spun a yarn and gave you some extra sounds, maybe. So here they are, hard at work. These are the fellows that I met a couple of years ago. Now we've met, which is wonderful. Mujahid, they're hard at work, and this is Zubair, who's at the moment the leader of this group. So he's brought all these young Tuvalu men together to try and, I guess, increase their activism around their language. And Inam was someone who was at the very beginning of it all. So we're very privileged to have you in the room with us today. This is his beautiful country. Gorgeous, gorgeous country. I encourage everyone not to be scared of going there. It's absolutely safe. I've been there multiple times and it's spectacularly beautiful. Probably the best kept secret in the world as a tourist destination. So, and he always ends it like this. Mahalo, nui loa. Thank you.
5 minutes for questions.
You're all going to SWAT, right?
Thank you. I love the presentation.
Thanks.
What an amazing story that is to share with us all. And I'd like to know more about the work that you're doing in the Sydney languages.
Sure.
And what sort of steps are they taking to start to reinvigorate their languages that have been asleep for so long?
Yeah, well, I think that, to be honest, it's this use of social media that's really connecting people up, because every time something happens, for example, on the they blog about it, they Facebook it, they Twitter it, they people just share, you know, through their other apps, WhatsApp, all sorts of. So there's a level of communication between people, even people who live in the same, say, city like Sydney, which is huge, but that where they can actually share and not just develop the language as a static kind of reading and writing system, which a lot of the early language revival in Australia was, you know, pre the sort of social media revolution, if you like. People were sitting in classrooms reading and writing these languages that were in revival mode. But now they're actually able to, you know, use it, like talk to each other. So they'll text, but they'll also include sound bites. So it's actually, I think the most important thing is that people are really actually speaking the language, using it, they're actively using it, and are also getting away from the sense of shame of making mistakes. You know, I'm seeing people feeling, seeing a lot freer, you know, prepared to have a go, just use the language. So on a daily basis, you can go almost anywhere in Sydney and hear the Sydney language used, and there's a lot of signage around, people are dual naming geographical features around the harbour, that's been going on for a while, and all over the. So there's just, but most of all, there's a wild enthusiasm, just as there is now, I think, with Torvali. It was very interesting to hear that Torvali people just didn't have a sense of being Torvali, but now through getting involved with language documentation, and it's revival to a degree,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it? It's the same kind of thing in Sydney. People are now. The clan groups are all re-emerging. You hear people talking about being Gweagal from over on the Sutherland area, being Burramuttigal out in Parramatta area, Gadigal on the Sydney CBD, over on the side of town I live on, Gammaragal. So people are using their so they're starting to be Aboriginal again in Sydney, and also reclaim the country physically, reimagine the place as an Aboriginal place, you know. So it's remarkable. Yeah.
Yeah, thank you very much. I really enjoy your talk. I teach social media and instructional media for my second language learners. So I guess my question is, I wonder if you have observed any examples of incidences when people use social media this way, much more of an agentic and mindful way to actively engage in their own language and communities and culture, whether they overcome some of the negative effects of social media. For example, we all kind of sometimes mindlessly screening whatever there, we just don't have a deeper engagement of with each other, with the community anymore because of the negative effects of mobile and social media. What I see is much more of engaging, mindful, authentic, and purposeful, responsible use of social media.
It is, you know, and people stop and read. For example, that New Year's greeting in Darug, people are reading it and commenting on it and then looking at ways to use that language and thinking about what that person has said. So it's actually giving people an opportunity to I'm going to say recreate natural communication, because for a long time there were people in Sydney who would do speeches, for example, but nobody would necessarily understand them. But now they're talking to each other, just as the Torvali are talking to each other in Torvali, and they've actually even gone to the trouble of creating this keyboard that means they can represent the sounds that aren't in Urdu. In the language of Sydney, it's easier. We use the Roman script, and you know, people are. And also, people are trying. The really interesting thing is the previous talk was one of the talks I've heard today. Were talking about one of the Maori presenters was talking about getting the sound of Maori back. So they've gone through a period where people speak Maori, but now they actually want to stop speaking Maori as if you've come from an English tradition of language. And they want to speak Māori in the way that it would have sounded, and that still sounds from the, if you like, the native speakers. So this is happening in the Sydney area too. Mm-hmm. What would our sounds be?
Mm-hmm.
So they're actually using social media to, I guess, practice the use of the language. So it's very engaged. And I see exactly the same thing with Tuvalu, where you've got people writing poetry and sharing poetry. Really deep cultural practice, and that image of people sitting around singing, you know, impromptu at home, but then live streaming it. So people even in Saudi Arabia who were Tuvalu apparently were watching it, getting all homesick, but they could use their language. So it's a way of reaching out to diaspora communities as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested whether, I don't know how many Tuvalu there are in Australia, not very many, but I think there are a few. But my other colleague is Saraiki from Multan, and you know, we've been interested in what that diaspora population might do to keep Saraiki going. So people are using social media also when they're a long, long way away from where their core country is to keep their language going.
Yeah, it will be really interesting to see how the traditional sound, as well as the new, how people perceive the sound through social media and co-construct new sound of that language.
It's a wonderful area for some collaborative research and transnational research.
Yeah.
That's what I'm finding so interesting as an Australian, to be engaging with this community in North Pakistan. There are so many things that resonate, as they do anywhere in the world, with Indigenous communities, but the comparative is also kind of uplifting, you know.
Yeah.
So.
I'm curious about another phenomenon. Do you feel a threat of language loss for your community who have been migrated to urban centers?
Yeah, definitely.
Because of language content. Because in the case of Tuvalu, we have observed that almost half of the population has been permanently living in urban centers, and they are losing their language very rapidly. And also the examples you showed for the use of social media are mostly from the people who are living in the native area.
On country,
Or those who have been recently being migrated to some other places out of native area, but those Tuvaluans who have born and raised somewhere else, they have very limited interest for their language, and they practice a limited use of social media for by using their language. What's the case in
It's interesting. Even in the case of your own language, I had a conversation with Mujahid about what we use in linguistics, the term glottophagy, you know, people eating their language, if you like. So mothers encouraging their children to use the prestige languages, so in Pakistan, Urdu, and of course English. But and he posted online in Facebook about what he'd observed in Karachi, so that's a diaspora urban population, and people were shocked, because it actually gave him an opportunity to show people what is actually happening with their language. Because the trouble with urban populations is they don't actually even notice what's happening. So our language loss in Australia was definitely very much pushed along by people being moved, we say, off country. And we were grouped into areas, onto missions and reserves. But also people moved away for work, or they were unable to continue their lifestyle in their country because it was taken over by non-Aboriginal people, stolen, so no longer able to live on country. So that movement away of people off country, as we say in Australia, has had a huge impact. And so a lot of us are sort of trying to move back onto country, and one way of doing that is also, again, using digital media, social media, using you know, media in general, by having virtual experiences. So every time my mob share something about the high country and there's the images of it, I immediately feel myself back in my country. So I think that's probably going on with your language as well. Those people in Saudi Arabia watching everyone sitting around in Kadam, in Kamal, seeing people singing and playing, you know, getting all nostalgic, it keeps that connection. So back to your agentive stuff, I think there's a lot of agency created through you. And, you know, we can be language activists using social media. So, yeah, thank you. Good question. Thanks.
Sorry, we have to leave it there.
Yeah, I'm sorry I went on. Thank you.